There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Third and final hour of the show. Keep your thoughts coming in. Text them through to us on 4001. Equally, you can have your say online as well. At DubaiEye1038FM, at DubaiEyeSports. Norwich leading QPR by 3-0. The only bad news for Norwich at the moment is that they have been reduced to 10 men. Red card for the home team. But 50 minutes left on the clock there, and it looks like the points are theirs. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on the cricket for us.
Yes, yeah, the first of today's two matches in the IPL. The second match is in Hyderabad, where the Sunrisers Hyderabad will take on the Mumbai Indians. That gets underway in about 20 minutes' time. But the match underway in Chennai is the Super Kings hosting the Kings 11 Punjab. Chennai batted first, 160 for three. They scored in their 20 overs. Kings 11 Punjab are struggling, 50 for two. The man we talked about earlier about doing the damage, Chris Gayle, he was dismissed in the first over of Harbhajan Singh. So 50 for two, Kings 11 Punjab. They require another 111 runs. 8 wickets in hand, so they do have some wickets up their sleeves, but only 12.3 overs remaining.
Now let's turn attention to football and live football here on Dubai I-103.8. Our late game will of course be the semi-final, or the first of the semi-finals for this year's Emirates FA Cup. Man City taking on their opponents a little later on in proceedings against Brighton, live from Wembley. We'll have more on that one throughout the course. But there are three games in the Premier League, and of course you can listen to the Premier League action live here on Dubai I-103.8 across the UAE, courtesy of our friends and colleagues at Talk Sport, which is where we can go now. Three games kicking off at 6 o'clock after the change to the clocks last weekend. So 6 o'clock kickoff here in the UAE, 3 o'clock back in the UK. Our feature game is going to be Newcastle against Crystal Palace, but of course you'll have all the goals from the other two games as and when they go in. That's Huddersfield against Leicester and Bournemouth against Burnley. But to Newcastle we must go now, where we can catch up with your match commentator Dan Wheeler, who joins us live on the line now from the United Kingdom. Dan, appreciate your time ahead of this match. And I suppose all the chat at the moment in the lead-up to kick-off are these rather bizarre comments from Rafa Benitez yesterday in the build-up to the game. He says he's waiting for an answer over his future, that the ball is firmly in the court of the Newcastle topper echelons and management. Fans obviously desperate for the club and Benitez to come to some sort of agreement. Any more details on that?
Afternoon, first of all. No, not to any more meat on the bones other than that, really. Yeah, it was a telling press conference given by Rafa Benitez yesterday. Yeah, firmly saying now the decision is Mike Ashley's and co. The club have now got to decide. He wants to stay. Of course, his deal runs out at the end of the season. As you rightly say, he's got a big affinity with the fans. He's already gone on record, Benitez, and saying, to be honest, they're the reason I've stayed for so long. We know it's been a difficult time for him. The restrictions financially are well known at Newcastle. Mike Ashley chooses to run the club his way in a certain way. It's caused frustration to the fans over the years with the perceived lack of investment and lack of success. And Benitez, I think, has been a very calm hand amongst all of that, really. But clearly he wants a decision. He'd like to stay, but he knows that obviously no offer at the moment has been forthcoming, bubbling away in the background. I was going to say a subplot, but it's not really that. It's a bit more than that. It's sometimes the main headline is what's going to happen to the club itself, because we know it's been up for sale for quite a while now. That appears to have slowed a little bit. So will Mike Ashley take it off the market officially? What's his future? There's a lot of unanswered questions at Newcastle. The only thing they can potentially answer today, although not mathematically, is secure their Premier League survival, because by all accounts they probably only need realistically one more win to do that, with now obviously only one relegation spot available.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I was looking at the table obviously in the lead up to this game. Newcastle 7 points clear of the drop zone, 14th, 1 point behind Crystal Palace. So is this a mid-table clash, or as you say, statistically, is relegation a possibility?
I don't think it is for either of those two sides. We know obviously that Fulham joined Huddersfield last weekend to go into the Championship next season. Cardiff are in that last spot at the moment. It's looking like it might end that way. So I think Crystal Palace and Newcastle can breathe relatively easily. I hope it's a relaxed game today, and I hope we get a little bit more spark from both these sides. Newcastle at home are great at the moment, 5 wins in a row. They've won 5 of the last 10 matches, 15 points since Christmas in 2019. Only Arsenal, Manchester City and Liverpool have accrued more. And it's that run that they've been on that's really taken them out of the relegation situation and posted them in comparatively the clearer air of nearly mid-table. So they should be relaxed. They're very good at home recently. Palace, we know, froze spectacularly on Tottenham Hotspur's big house party earlier in the week. So they should be wanting a bit more about them this afternoon. Certainly Roy Hodgson wants much more of a positive reaction. Their record at St James's Park is nothing to write home about, that said. But I'm just hoping we see a bit more from Palace that we did at Tottenham Hotspur's new ground, certainly.
Let's get to a bit of team news, if you can feed us anything of that. I mean, obviously, ahead of this game, we had a few injury doubts for Newcastle. Not so much the case for Crystal Palace as well. I think Roy Hodgson pretty much got a full squad to choose from, which is nice going into the final games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much exactly that. Yeah, he made, I think, 2 changes for the game in midweek. So whether he will just tinker those back again, we'll have to wait and see. Scott Dan made way in the week for Martin Kelly, so whether he will change that, whether we'll see Christian Benteke from the start again, I don't know. Obviously their key man, Wilfred Zaha, Michy Batshuayi up front, and Andros Townsend facing his former club today. As for Newcastle, well, they should bring, I'd imagine they'd bring Fabian Schär straight back there. He's a Swiss international. He's had a really good season, actually, for the Magpies. He's missed the last 2 games from accruing 10 yellow cards, so I'm expecting him to come straight back in. There's been 1 or 2 fans clamouring for Jonjo Shelvey to get a start as well, and a little bit of a run towards the end of the season, so we'll wait and see whether that happens as well. But I'm anticipating certainly Schär should come back in for Newcastle.
Dan, I do want to get your thoughts on the Emirates Airline FA Cup match later this evening. But before we do so, another great come-from-behind victory for Liverpool last night. Friday night football, I guess we can have another discussion about the merits of that. But it is a interesting title run-in. The title lead has changed 25 times this season.
Yeah.
No one seems to be really wanting to give way. Everyone, I think, is thinking City are going to always be there or thereabouts. Will Liverpool hang in there? But they're doing a heck of a job at the moment.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I was asked this question probably 4 to 6 weeks ago about who would win or where my money was. And back then, I did stick it on City purely because I thought the fact that they've been there before, they have got the better squad. I think they will still do it. But having said that, Liverpool have shown great character. They've certainly had the luck of champions, champions-elect, certainly against Spurs. But then they showed the character of champions last night, didn't they, against Southampton, fighting back from behind in that game to win 3-1. Mo Salah with a brilliant goal to add to his collection. He's now the fastest Liverpool player ever in Premier League history to score 50 goals. So if he's now starting to find his best form, then maybe it is going to go to the very last game, and maybe this will be Liverpool's year. But as you rightly say, I read that stat as well here today, 25 times the league leadership has changed, which is quite incredible. Of course, we don't know who's going to end up winning, but one thing I think we can all be fairly certain is that number is going to increase. It's going to be much more than 25 when we do get to the end of the season, because I think there's a lot of more twists and turns to come. Everyone's saying that these two sides will drop points. I think that's true. You've got City wanting to complete the Grand Slam, of course, of winning all 4 trophies if they can. That would be a remarkable thing to do. Let's not forget Liverpool could also complete a bit of a double with the Premier League and the Champions League as well. It's going to be incredible. And we haven't had a really great title race for quite a while, and this is bubbling up into be something very, very special.
And Dan, that Emirates FA Cup semi-final takes place at Wembley, of course, 5:30 UK time, which will be 8:30 UAE time. Manchester City overwhelming favourites to get past Brighton and Hove Albion and go to that final. But you never quite know what Chris Helton might have up his sleeve.
You never know. There is always the chance of an upset, this FA Cup semi-final. It's sort of made for it in a way, isn't it? But again, I can't really see anything other than a Manchester City win, even if he just decide to rotate things, Pep Guardiola. We know the depth that his squad has. We know the calibre of players he can bring on, and there isn't much of a drop-off in quality, and you can rest assured that he'll want to win all of these trophies. They've already got the League Cup in the bag. He's never won the FA Cup, Pep Guardiola, so maybe he values that higher than we might think. The Champions League, again, will be something very much that he wants to do. And I think also retaining the Premier League title would be something incredible for City, something they've never, ever done. So he's got motivation to win all of these things. And if anyone's got the squad to do it, it's him. And I think City will easily win this afternoon.
That one's off at 8:30 local time here in the UAE. Live coverage right here on Dubai I-103.8. Before that, you've got the melodious tones of Mr. Dan Wheeler talking us through Newcastle against Crystal Palace. Newcastle, home advantage. Will that see them over the line today?
Oh, I think so, yeah. 5 wins in a row at home. They haven't won 6 in a row since the days of Bobby Robson back at the start of 2004. I think there'll be goals. I hope there's goals, because it was pretty boring 0-0 in August between these two sides, and 2 of the last 3 have actually been drawn. So I think there will be goals, and I think Newcastle will win.
Dan, looking forward to it. Thanks so much indeed for taking time out ahead of the game to put us in the picture. I'll thank you to you, Mr. Dan Wheeler.
Pleasure, guys.
Big thanks to Dan for joining us live on the line. You can catch him just after 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE as he calls this one, Newcastle against Palace. And then obviously news and of goals from the other games. Bournemouth against Burnley, Huddersfield against Leicester. Let's go to some of the team news that has come through from those games as we are waiting for that to filter through and get confirmed. Newcastle boss Rafa Benitez, 2 changes to the side, which lost at Arsenal, that'll be. Fabian Schär returns from suspension, and Ki Sung-jung comes in as well. Paul Dummett drops the bench, while Mo Diame is left out of the squad completely. Those are the changes for Rafa. Andros Townsend returns from injury, start for Palace. He replaces Cech Kiyote in Roy Hodgson's starting 11. Mamadou Sakho remains out, but there are places for Jordan Ayew and Christian Benteke among the substitutes on the bench. It is the Premier League. 3 games for us today, all kicking off at 6 o'clock. And then, of course, the glory, the history, the romance of the Emirates FA Cup. Getting underway at 8:30. Awesha alongside me at the moment, big Arsenal fan as well. He will be watching on with interest. Semi-finals, FA Cup, Wembley, fan?
Oh, massive, of course. I'm backing our Arsenal, the North London boys, to come through today. I reckon they're in with a chance.
But the whole idea of them, I mean, there is that debate, isn't there? It's a debate we've had before of whether semi-finals of an FA Cup should be played at Wembley, or you save it solely for the final. I don't know. Do you think it dilutes the atmosphere a little
bit?
They
used to be at Aston Villa, didn't they, in the Midlands?
Yeah, used to play neutral ground.
Look, Wembley's the redevelopment of Wembley costs a lot of money, and they need to recoup some costs there. I guess in some ways, going to Wembley, if it's your team for the final, and I've gone twice in the last 3 years with Chris McCarthy, it's great if your club's involved. And I guess the clubs that get to the semi-final stage, you may not get a chance to go to the final, you may not ever get a chance to go to Wembley. So if you're a club fan, the chance to even go for a semi-final at Wembley is quite an amazing thing to do. So
I'm not convinced.
You're not convinced?
No, I'm not
neutral.
Convinced. I just think it should be the final. What's wrong with the neutral grounds? It's quite nice to take.
Wembley is a neutral ground.
Well, it's a neutral ground for the final. It's a national stadium. So
it's a neutral ground for the semi-final as well.
You use a national stadium for the finals. So you use neutral grounds. I mean, you know, why not play this game? Okay, maybe Man City and Old Trafford might be causing a few problems, but why not play this game, like you say, at Aston Villa or at one of the other stadiums around the ground?
Yeah, I agree. You don't play you look at cricket, you don't play the NatWest semi-final at Lords, do you? You only play the final at Lords, the Mecca. That's the Wembley, mate. It's got to be preserved just for the final.
We'd like your thoughts on this one. Two semi-finals for you. You got obviously Manchester City against Brighton a little later on, and then another intriguing semi-final tomorrow. Watford against Wolves tomorrow at 7 p.m. local time here in the UAE. Who'd have predicted that one, eh? Who would have predicted those four teams? Okay, I can pretty much guarantee that Man City would have been in everyone's pick for who goes through to the semi-finals of the Emirates FA Cup this year. But would anyone have had Brighton, Watford and Wolves?
Yeah, to be fair though, Watford and Wolves, and Brighton to a fair degree, have had really good Premier League seasons. Wolves are, I think, in seventh position. Watford's not far behind them in the top ten, and Brighton aren't that far away. So, yeah, at the start of the year, I don't think you could have predicted that that would be three of your four semi-finalists. But based on their Premier League form, yeah, maybe not a bad shout these days.
And then, of course, one game from the Premier League tomorrow, and this man, OSL, will be keeping an eye on that one. Everton against Arsenal tomorrow afternoon. That one off at 5:05 in the afternoon. Arsenal travelling up to Everton for the Premier League. Listening to Dubai Eye 103.8, home of the Premier League here in the UAE. It's coming your way just after 6.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
Norwich have just rubbed a bit more salt into QPR's wounds. They're down to 10 men, and yet they've been able to score another goal. 93 minutes on the clock. A full-time can't come quick enough for QPR. They trail Norwich, 10-man Norwich, that is, by 4 goals still. Another dominant display by the Canaries, and I'm sure one that will be cheered by our friend Dale Gordon. Full-time whistle has just gone down there. Norwich having an absolute belter of a season in the Championship, and will be everyone's favourites for promotion into the Premier League through one of the top two spots with automatic promotion and not having to fight it out in the playoffs. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on the rugby for us at the moment.
Yeah, early kickoff in the English Premiership is at the Rec. And I can tell you that Bath lead Bristol in the, is it a West Country derby?
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh,
West Country derby. So Bath taking on Bristol, and it's Bath that lead after 20 minutes, 12 points to 3.
A lot of high sixes all around the ground down there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I can tell you that two international stars, one of yesteryear and one of current crop, have scored tries. Jonathan Joseph, we haven't even talked about him in the England setup in the last sort of few months. He's gone over after 2 minutes. And Jamie Roberts, good friend of Tom Urquhart and good friend of the Grill, has also scored. Reece Priestland has kicked one conversion there for that. So Bath lead Bristol 12 points to 3. Early kickoff in the French top 14. It's a big clash in the south of France. Toulouse taking on Toulon. And I can tell you Toulouse lead this match 15 points to 3. Tries for Toulouse, or actually for Toulon. Toulon lead Toulouse 15 points to 3. Tries to JP Peterson and Milikai Fikatoa for Toulon in that match. 32 minutes gone, 15-3 for Toulon. Also, Super Rugby, the late kickoff, the last match of today is in Pretoria. It sees the Bulls taking on the Jaguares from Argentina, and the Bulls lead by 2-0. 17 minutes gone there. 6-0 that score in that match. Super Rugby results from early today. The Rebels defeated the Sunwolves 42 points to 15. The Crusaders were too strong for the Brumbies, 36 points to 14. And Auckland, there was a great match. The Blues defeated the New South Wales Waratahs 32 points to 29. Let's just have a quick listen to the highlights of this great match.
In the opening 3 weeks of the competition, they were winless, out of form and staring at the abyss. The Blues in 2019 are now 3-3 with a serious chance at keeping their hopes alive for 2019. And co-commentary, former All Black fullback, Mills Mulyaina. Martin on the line, a cut-out ball for Robinson. What a try for the Blues. What a start. 3 wins in their last 3 starts. They're on a roll, the Blues. Now Otete Black calls for it. Nonu with a little second man play. And they're in again. Caleb Clark coming from the right wing. A nice piece of subtlety from Maa Nonu. And Caleb Clark with the second try for the Blues. Phipps goes looking for the ball. Foley. The ball out on the long side. It's in the air. Oh, the Waratahs. Israel Folau. What a player. What an athlete. And what a finish. Patrick again for Simmons. Now the drive from the Waratahs forwards. It's a good one. They're into the in goal. They just need to get the ball down and they will get their second try. The Waratahs, they've worked hard on the back foot for the opening 20. Separating these two teams, two tries each, 17 points to 14. The Blues over the Waratahs. Phipps, they know they've got an advantage. Kepu passes from the ground. Israel Folau's on an edge, trying to commit two defenders before Newsom. They were patient once again. They got field position. They were playing an advantage from a ball being knocked down, and Newsom with a very good try. In this contest, 1 point separated them both. We've just joined our coverage, 3-3. Coming into the game, Folau with a ball out the back door, and it's loose. Riko Ioane Manonu. They're not going to run him down. The veteran All Black is under the post for the Blues. One loose pass. Manonu gets it done. Two try assists. Now he gets his own name on the score sheet. Gordon runs from the base. Gordon is going to be too good. Great job from Jake Gordon, the replacement halfback. They've turned the corner, the Blues. What an unbelievable month for one of our iconic franchises. We said at the beginning of the game, they started the season 0-3, staring at the abyss. And now they've gone four straight. This guy, the captain, what a leader, what a finish. The Blues, 32, the Waratahs, 29.
That was the Super Rugby result from earlier today in Auckland. The Blues getting the win over the New South Wales Waratahs, 32 points to 29. Other news coming out of Super Rugby and New Zealand earlier this week is the sad retirement of Israel Dagg, a World Cup winner in 2011 and 2015, but he's been plagued by knee injuries. This is what he had to say on when he announced his retirement.
Just had a bad knee for the last couple of years, but I've just tried to guts it out, and the more I played on it, the worse it got, and I think it was just affecting me mentally, and just I wasn't able to do the things I used to be able to do and perform. And when you're playing in the Crusaders or the All Blacks and whatever it is, you've got to perform, and I just felt like I wasn't doing that. And got some medical advice at the start of the year, and pretty much just told me straight, and then we made the decision and just moved forward.
Those are the thoughts of Israel Dagg, who was forced to retire from the game earlier on this week. One man who's not been forced to retire but has been forced to make a choice about his future is Mr. Brad Shields. Obviously, he's answered a call from Eddie Jones. He's unearthed a couple of relations from the past. Parents, grandparents, doesn't really matter these days, does it, Archie?
Great lost uncle. Or
what is the story with Brad Shields? Why didn't he? Why was he always second best when it came to all the All Blacks?
He just wasn't quite good enough. I mean, he was up against some good players. He played as either number 8, so he's up against Kieran Reid, so that's probably not going to get in the team ahead of him. He was a number sort of 6 hybrid player, and there were better players in the New Zealand system. So very, very good leader, good solid player in Super Rugby. He was the captain of the Hurricanes, and he thought, well, if I want to aspire to play international rugby, and he hadn't been selected by New Zealand, I think he had great grandparents that were British or English.
They found something.
And Eddie Jones says, well, if you fancy a game, he signed with Wasps, and we'll get you in the mix. And I think he played for England before he'd actually moved to the country, because he flew him over to the tour of the South African tour, and they picked him. That was last summer, wasn't it? So he's been fast tracked into the team. I don't think he's nailed down a spot yet.
No.
But he's in and out. He's there in the mix. I think he's one of those really good sort of squad players that will provide a lot of depth if he doesn't start for England. So, yeah, interesting move. He turned down the opportunity to stay in New Zealand and fight for a place, and he shifted allegiances to the Red Rose.
One of the benefits of signing for Wasps and playing your rugby over in England is that every now and again you get sent over to the Dumbria Beach Hotel to sun yourself with your family and your teammates. Joe Launchbury and Brad Shields have both been enjoying a bit of time off after England's Six Nations campaign at the Dumbria Beach Hotel. Chris McCarty got wind of this, went down doorstep then with a recorder and asked a few pointed questions. Started by asking big Brad Shields, because he's not a small bloke, about that move and how the England change was affected.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a little bit of an understatement, to be fair. It's been crazy, and if you asked me, a year, 2 years ago, that if I'd be in this situation now, I'd probably tater bugger off. But as Joe said, the great thing about sport, and it's just an opportunity for me, and I'm glad I took it. And it's been a crazy few months, but I settled in well, and the Wasp boys and the England boys have been very welcoming of us, me and my family. I think my wife's still settling in, and she misses her family as well. But look, I think we're doing all right, and got a couple of good, like, a really good club that we're at. You know, obviously we could do with a couple more wins, but doesn't change the fact that I'm enjoying it here. And you know, to be able to play international rugby at the level with such a great group and such a good team, you know, I can't ask for much more than that, and it's such a privilege.
Do you remember the moment when whether it was a telephone call, whether it was you deciding, listen, we're going to take up this? Did it cause sleepless nights? I mean, just give us a little bit of insight into the thought process and the moment that you thought, sat down with your family and said, we're doing this.
Yeah, I think I've obviously been aware of, you know, my situation and that my parents were English, and that there was that possibility down the track. And it's kind of a weird one because lots of people have different views on it, but at the end of the day, I sort of thought, you know, what's good for myself and my family, and how I want to reach my goals and play international rugby. And to be honest with you, by the end of it, it was a really easy decision. And the point I was at in my career, I needed something else, and I was very fortunate enough to get the opportunity to play for England when Eddie mentioned that I might be able to come to Africa. So my wheels start spinning at 100 miles an hour, and you know, I was extremely chuffed to be even put in the same sort of group as these guys, and to get my opportunity was amazing. And I think that's what made it a little bit easier at the end of the day. You know, it's tough, the move and all that sort of stuff, that's, you know, speaks for itself, but what made it easier was that I was coming over and I was fulfilling a goal of mine, and you know, with the support of my wife and my daughter now and my family, mum and dad as well, it made it a lot easier. So
Joe, for a decision like that Brad's made, it's obviously a massive one for he and his family. In terms of the inner sanctum of that England dressing room, you hear the noise, you obviously read newspapers, you see the news. When you're hearing about an individual who has done what he's done down in New Zealand, coming over, what is the buzz? I mean, what is being said before you'd even met Brad?
You can be honest.
No, we're obviously very lucky. Brad's obviously played a very experienced for me personally as a captain at Worcester. To have someone of Brad's experience, Brad obviously captain back home in New Zealand for a number of years, and for me personally to have that experience in our dressing room is exactly what we need at the club. And I think you can see not many guys can fly halfway across the world to South Africa, pitch up on the Sunday and be in the 23 playing international rugby the following Saturday. So that's a massive testament to him as an individual and his professionalism to learn all the plays, learn everyone's name, and learn the whole system in a week and represent his country at the end of the weekend. So he's been great for us. And in terms of that, hopefully obviously we're kind of used to the transition of guys coming in and out of the team. Guys even through clubs we may not necessarily know who play in different clubs across the Premiership, and guys constantly coming in and out of the team. So hopefully we've got that transition of new guys coming to the squad pretty nailed down, and hopefully everyone feels pretty comfortable when they come into the environment.
Was the banter flying, Brad, once you came into the dressing room?
It was good, mate. Yeah, it was good. I mean, that's all part and parcel of rugby. You know, I think rugby's a universal language. You know, if you didn't have banter, it'd be a pretty boring time. But I think, as you say, like that off-field sort of connection creates an awesome culture, and there's a good balance at the moment. So to come into that and, you know, almost fit in, virtually felt like fitting in straight away, and felt like a second family was pretty cool.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
A great victory for Hibs then against Hearts a little earlier on today. Last gasp goal in the second half for Hibs means that they take the 3 points away from home at Hearts. Norwich, no such problem from them apart from that red card. They thrashed Queen's Park Rangers by 4-0. What else is going on in football? We're turning attention over to the European leagues now, where Espanyol came from behind to beat Girona in the early kickoff in La Liga. They won that one 2-1. Real Madrid in action against Eibar at 6:15 this evening. No goals as yet in what promises to be a fascinating evening in the German Bundesliga. You're going to have to wait till 8:30 for the kickoff of Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. A lot resting on this game, Mark Archer. This is pretty much a sort of title decider, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, Bayern Munich have had it all their own way in the Bundesliga for the last, I think, 5 or 6 seasons. Yeah, yeah. They've won that title. And they've been challenged well by Dortmund this season. And this match is basically, a six-pointer, you can say, at the top of the league. And the winner of this game should go a long way to deciding the title in the Bundesliga. So it's good for football, it's good for the German league that you've got two teams in it this late in the season. But, let's see what happens.
Parma against Torino has kicked off already as well. We're into, 10 minutes till half-time there. No goals in that one. Juve are in action against AC Milan. Big game kicking off at 8 p.m. local time here in the UAE. That's what's happening in the world of football as we get ready to listen to Newcastle against Crystal Palace. That one live from 6 o'clock here on Dubai I-103.8. And then straight after that, we'll turn our attention to Manchester City against Brighton and Hove Albion. The first of two semi-finals in this year's Emirates FA Cup, getting underway at 8:30, being broadcast live here on Dubai I-103.8. Mark Archer's got all the latest from the world of cricket.
Yeah, Chennai Super Kings taking on the Kings XI Punjab, the first of today's doubleheader in the IPL. And it's looking like it could be an interesting finish here. Chennai Super Kings batted first. They scored 160 for 3 in their 20 overs. Faf du Plessis top scoring with 54. Now, Kings XI Punjab lost two early wickets in the first over of Harbhajan Singh. It is spinning, but there's been a partnership put together by the two batters at the crease. Khan and KL Rahul have put on, I think, at least 100 now for their partnership. They're 105 for 2 with 5 overs remaining. So they still need a decent amount of runs here. I can tell you they need 56 runs off with 29 balls remaining. So it is could be a close finish here. Chennai Super Kings need a wicket or two to get the balance back in their favour. But as this partnership gathers pace, Kings XI Punjab have a shout. How do you see it, Oase, going in here? You've been telling me you're still backing Chennai, but as the overs count down and they still only lost two wickets, you've got to give them a puncher's chance.
Yeah, but like you said, look, it's spinning. Because the fact that it's spinning and you've still got the likes of Imran Tahir and Harbhajan Singh to bowl the full allotted overs. That's the brilliance of MS Dhoni. He's read the wicket so beautifully. He's held back those four overs from his two international spinners, and he's going to go to them towards the end of the innings. The run rate's already just over 11s required. I know the two guys are in, but it's not that easy to hit, especially the wrist spin of Imran Tahir in conditions where it's turning, to be able to hit boundaries and go at nearly 12 and over.
Still a risk, though, keeping two spinners this late, because if one spinner gets it wrong, they can travel. And an over of 15-20 now almost takes the game out of sight for Chennai. So it's a bold move by Dhoni, backing the international class spinners. But if they don't quite get it in the right spot, land it, or one of the batsmen just gets his eye on them, two batsmen are well set now and takes the game away from Chennai, still could be an upset.
Yeah, but conditions are in the spinner's favour. I mean, if a time there was that a spinner is going to bowl towards the end of the innings, this is the wicket you want to bowl it on. Otherwise, you would never go to a spinner to bowl towards the end of the innings. So that's, you know, they are playing in MS Dhoni's back garden here, Chennai. They've won many an IPL competition, many a game in Chennai, and they know exactly how to read, and he knows exactly how to read those conditions. And I think he's got it down to a T. I mean, the run rate's just around the 12 mark now. I personally think Chennai have got it in the bag.
Interesting times for the shortest version of the game thus far, or not, as the case may be. T10, obviously, been around for the last couple of seasons. The 100 is on the horizon over in the UK. The Super Over. Did either of you see the Super Over? Did you see the Super Over?
No, I read about this. This was the game a couple of days ago, wasn't it?
It was last week, and it obviously came down tight at the end of it, so Super Over the whole thing. My only sort of comment on the Super Over, which is, you know, straightforward, six balls, get as many runs as you can. My only comment, it took half an hour. The Super Over took half an hour. I thought the whole point of T20 cricket was to speed things up. And with these tactical, you know, timeouts, with the bits and pieces, they're just taking a long time, the games at the moment. And obviously there is a commercial element to that, I get that. But are they sort of dropping the ball a little bit? Are they missing the point of what T20 was established to do in the first place?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, Tom, but they've got to get the balance right. I totally agree. I mean, look, I understand the 2.5 minutes or 2 minutes of strategic timeout that they seem to have in IPL, which is all well and good. But yeah, a super over should not be taking 30 minutes. No. I mean, no way. I mean, it's one over a side. An over should only take like 4 minutes. I mean, I don't know what they're doing for 30 minutes. I'm not really sure. But and also, to keeping in mind the time issue, they also get the team bowling second in a game who end up t- tying a game, end up actually bowling first. So there's no change of, you know, the team has to get their pads off and start bowling. No, they just carry on batting. So I don't really know what they're doing for half an hour, and certainly not doing half an hour adverts, that is for sure.
Ace, question for you. Tactical timeouts, as they have in IPL. What goes on in a tactical timeout? Does the coach come out to the batsman and say, boys, get a move on, we interview here? I mean, what really happens? Because he's got the team around him, and then the team on the field, what do they say? Oh, you're going to be bowling next, or we need to stay alert to the quick single, or you protect this area. I mean, really, what happens in a tactical timeout? Talk us through the 2 minutes.
Tactics.
Tactics.
Look, if you're a batting team, generally, you're generally reading the game very well. Anyway, the two batters are reading the game. They know when they have to, you know, keep up with the rate. And the coach will literally come out. The top coaches will literally just say, hey, buddy, how you going? You're relaxed. You're good. You're in a good frame of mind. And they'll go back off. I think that the strategic timeout actually works well if a team is going around the park and you're in the field and you're getting pumped by someone like Chris Gayle, who's on 110, and you've got another four overs to bowl. That's the time where strategic...
Break the momentum, try and change things up, take a breather.
Exactly that.
Slow the pace up.
And the captain and the coach can regroup, come up with a new plan on, you know, and say, righto, for the next four overs, next five overs, whatever it is, we are going to do this, 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 and let's go for it. It really can bring a team together and say, righto, whatever's happened, let's start... let's really finish well and start that from the next four or five overs, whatever's left over. So I think that works well. I don't really think it works that well for the batting team.
It's just, it is interesting when time is obviously what everyone's talking about in the game. The other thing I get is the sort of pace of an IPL game, where you can watch the first 15 minutes, the first 15 overs in about 15 minutes, basically. They bang through the first 15 in no time whatsoever. And then you get down to the sort of latter overs. And I know that it's all down to tactics there, and, you know, it becomes a little bit more crucial. But there seems to be a lot of place of field movements in the last, what, two or three. If you compare how long it takes to bowl the last three overs compared to the first 15, I think they're probably about the same.
I was going to say, have you ever watched an NBA basketball match? The first three is four quarters in the match. The first three quarters
take no time at all.
And yeah, and then up to the final 2 minutes take sort of 48 minutes or whatever. The last 2 minutes take about half an hour.
But I was just going to say on that, I understand where you come from, Tom, but you've got to remember, in the first six overs, which is the start of the game, you only allow two fielders out of the circle. So you can only, you know, fiddle around with two fielders, and you just got a choice of two. Now, when the game obviously progresses towards the end of the game, you got to try and bring possibly three fielders into the ring from the offside, perhaps, to sort of protect the leg side. And then if you come up against a guy, someone like Archie, who's probably an offside player, you have to bring all your leg side players up. And, you know, sort of, that's what takes long time. And then if someone like Archie might be trying to find sweep and use the pace, then you got to bring the third man up, put the deep mid-off guy out. All that kind of stuff takes time. You don't need to do that at the start of the game, because you're only allowed those two guys out. If the guy is good enough to hit it over the top or ramp you over the keeper's head, you smile, you go, all right, good luck, buddy. You say to the bowler, good luck, buddy. Let's make sure you come up good for the next delivery. And that's probably the only reason why it takes so long.
How are you loving the IPL? Do send your final thoughts into the show, 4001. We are getting ever closer to the kickoff over at Newcastle. Newcastle taking on Palace, and then that will be followed straight after by Man City against Brighton. Lots therefore to look forward to. We wrap things up live from Barasti after.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're going to get around the grounds and mark your card for live sport in just a few moments' time. But 8 o'clock this evening, I should say, 8:15 is the Randox Grand National. Aintree will be where that takes place. 40 runners and riders going down two posts to take on the 35 obstacles around the 4 mile course. Make sure you do watch it by Racing showing it live, as it will be broadcast across the globe. If you've got any idea who's going to win it, do let us know, because we'd love to help you out with that one. It is, without reason, without doubt, one of the more difficult horse races in the world to attest, because of the element of chance. Let us therefore mark your card for you as we give you the Grand National preview.
Time for the big one then, the world's favourite race, the Grand National. Not the race it was, is it? Let's face it, with the fences modified last year, we saw Tiger Roll, Little Tiger Roll, go through every fence there was. On the second circuit, there was nothing left. So basically, what you need this year is an out-and-out stayer, because simply, it's almost like a hurdle race. And fences and hurdles, you need to stay more over hurdles over 3 miles. So it's going to be an out-and-out slog. The race totally revolves around Tiger Roll again. Yes, he's up £9, but he's £8 ahead of the handicapper because of that romp in the festival. If you could pick in holes in a 7-2 shot, there are plenty. It's a shorter break this year between Cheltenham and Aintree. Did his National look all that good on paper afterwards? Probably not. But that Galmoy hurdle win, it was absolutely sensational. It basically revolves around whether you want to take a price or not on him becoming the first horse since the 70s to do a red run. Everything's in place, isn't it? One horse that's going to have a big say against him is obviously Rathvinden, last year's 4 mile winner. Now, he's an out-and-out stayer. Willie Mullins just pipped by Tiger Roll last year with Pleasant Company. Every chance, I think, despite just the one run, albeit a win, Ruby Walsh, loads and loads to like. Are there any more coming in? There are. Joe Farrell, what a gamble he's been. Scottish National winner last time. Quietly came back to form at Newbury last time. He sneaked in down the bottom of the weights. If it becomes too much of a slog, those who above a lemon stone, they're going to struggle. Joe Farrell could be the one.
Make sure you do get involved with all things Grand National later on this afternoon into the evening, 8 o'clock, 8.15 is when they are off. Right, let's wrap things up. Mark Archer, last heads up from what's happening in the IPL at the moment.
Yeah, the first of today's two matches in the IPL. It looks like Chennai are going to get across the line. They batted first, 160 for three, and Kingsley and Punjab looks as though they're batting out for a draw, 122 for three with only 13 balls remaining. So they need 39 more runs. With 13 balls remaining, 18 runs and over. It's going to be tough to do from here. The pitch is turning. Harbhajan Singh's bowling his off breaks. Imran Tahir's bowling his leg spin, and it's looking very tough for Kingsley and Punjab from here. 122 for 3 with 13 balls remaining there. So it looks like a win for the Chennai Super Kings. Also getting underway shortly is the Sunrisers Hyderabad taking on the Mumbai Indians.
Archie, thanks so much indeed to you. Thanks also to you, Mr. Oweh Shah, for joining us live here on the show. If people want to get in touch with you and all that you're doing here in the UAE at the moment, Oweh?
Thanks for having me on the program today, Tom. Doing a few things, been doing a few motivational talks. Also, actually, funny enough, been involved with a friend's restaurant. He's opening up a new restaurant in Jumeirah called Shub Zaika. So involved with that, trying to help him out. Get in touch with me. I'm on Ace Shah underscore 203 on Instagram.
Good on you, Ace. Thanks so much indeed for joining us live here on the show. Marky Archer, last call on the rugby. Anything untoward that we need to know about before we sign off for the evening? Because obviously it's going to be a big weekend for rugby fans across the globe.
Yeah, just trying to bring you an update there. Of course, it's the Hong Kong Sevens final day tomorrow. Looking forward to the quarterfinals there. So Africa, USA, Fiji will take on Argentina. England will take on Samoa. And France will play New Zealand. If you're looking for something interesting to look at on YouTube, go and look up Sebastian Sobel singing the Proclaimers song, 100 Miles, in front of the South Stand at the Hong Kong Sevens. That's a sight to behold. And then I can tell you that the Rugby Premier League scores coming in half-time in the West Country Derby. Bath lead Bristol 19 points to 12. And Toulon lead the top 14 leaders to lose 15 points to 3 in the South of France Derby.
Good on you, Archie. Thanks so much indeed for your hard yards today. Thanks to Benj, to Hector, all the team for looking after us down here at Barasti. Thanks so much indeed to Barasti as well for hosting us yet again. Get yourself down here to Barasti to watch your Premier League action. Stay tuned. Newcastle up against Crystal Palace is next, and then Man City straight after that one. Do keep your thoughts coming through to us on 4001 and, of course, the Grand National from 8 o'clock this evening as well. And to that end, best of luck to my old mate, Richard Johnson. Jono, 23 years. Years in the saddle, used to be my scrum half at school all those years ago, champion jockey for so many seasons, but the one thing that has eluded him is the Grand National. Could this be his year?
It doesn't matter where you go, people know what the Grand National is, so to say you've won it would be a dream come true.
The last fence now at the National, and jamming it together. What's up, boys, in Bindaree? What's up, boys? Richard Johnson takes it up now on the near side. It's what's up, boys, as they race towards the elbow. He goes 2 lengths in front of Bindaree.
It was a big day, my first ride in the Grand National. It was one of those days that, you know, you dreamed of growing up. So to get a ride in the race was amazing. Unfortunately, I only got halfway around and seated the chair, so it was a big disappointment. Until then, I had a lovely position, sort of sixth or seventh, with a little bit of light everything I thought I was supposed to be doing right. Somehow I think he got in a little bit tight, and again in those days when the fences were even stiffer than they are today, it just made him make a slight mistake and sort of shot me in the air. It doesn't get any better watching it. Like Edmund, literally it had rained all, well, for about 3 days beforehand. You could even see standing water on the inside of the chalk, you know, just on the inside of the national course there. And Edmund loved soft ground. He'd won a Welsh national before. You know, it seemed like the perfect conditions. He sort of got in close to the chair and sort of, well, basically refused. He sort of decided at the last minute he hadn't got enough impulsion to get over it, and he stayed on the one side, and I went flying over the other side and sort of ended up sort of in the bottom of the fence. And unfortunately, there's a lovely picture goes round that of me hiding in the bottom of the fence, I think, because I thought at the time there was probably 35 horses behind me, but even by that time there was already, you know, an awful lot of the horses had disappeared and either pulled up or fallen. The one thing we thought he'd stay forever, it sounds silly, but the race couldn't have gone any better. I sort of jumped up sides at the second last. The horse in front, Binder, he looked like he was sort of almost struggling. I had a loose horse with me as well, so you thought, you know, I'm not on my own. Jumped last, set sail for home. Sounds silly, but that's the long and short of it. I set sail thinking, right, I'll go and win the Grand National. I got to the elbow and thought, stupidly, I thought my race was won and I got it in the bag, and then all of a sudden you just felt him start to weaken underneath me, and then I could just see Bindery coming back. I knew the horse couldn't give me any more. I knew he'd give me everything. And I knew the other horse was coming past me. So, and that last, yeah, that last 100 yards was the worst 100 yards I probably have ever ridden in, really.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.